Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. You know, this show is actually a continuation of our topic from the last show. We were having such a wonderful discussion, and then I looked up at the screen because I've got a screen that shows the time and how much time is left, and I went, oh my, we've run out of time and there's lots of questions. So we're going to have a continuation of the topic of overcoming setback. And just like on TV, when you have the second half of something, I'm going to do a little synopsis, and I see we have lots of participation, and I see a lot of you are redoing the question that you had from before, which is marvelous. But let's do a little bitty synopsis for the people that didn't hear it last time and for the new listeners. And thank you all for being here. How wonderful. Okay, so what is a setback within the context of our work of our seminar, our workshop, our mediation, our alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is that we're doing, that we are usually the leader of? And so that was our first question. We talked about what kind of setbacks we see, and we decided that in our context, a setback is a temporary defeat, an argument that takes the group off course, when there's lack of agreement concerning the next step in the process, and when we get distracted by assigning blame, that happens, right? And then we talked about a setback being caused by lack of consensus. At least that's what I called it, because we had lots of people talking about the same thing, and that was very, very good. But, you know, we kind of get all the questions and all the comments together, and then we think about them as a group, right? That's our discussion. So under lack of consensus, petty disagreements, those happen a lot, right? The different goals and reasons for the setback and the reasons for people actually coming to the group and how they might have the same goal, ultimately, but different reasons. We talked about participant animosity that they've brought with them into the group. They don't like each other on some sort of a different reason, probably. And they've brought their animosity with them, and it's affecting the group dynamic. We talked about third-party interference with someone being an outsider who has some influence over the participants, and they're not exactly in the room, they're not exactly a participant, but their influence is felt. And if it's a setback influence, perhaps it's more of an interference, right? Right. We also talked about the goal having too broad or too narrow a focus. You have to know where you're going in order to know when you've gotten there, right? And sometimes it's too broad. Save the world. Well, that's nice. But from what? Yeah, it has to have focus in order to really be effective. And we talked about bias that impedes progress, which is often kind of caused by third-party interference, too, because bias and prejudice and like that are ugly things that raise their head and must be dealt with so that they don't really become a setback that's permanent, right? Right. Now, that is like a 3-minute synopsis of what it was that we did for our whole hour show last week. And if you would like to hear, now you're all excited, yeah. And if you would like to listen to it again, if you were there, yay. Or if you would like to hear it for the first time, it is on our website archived, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived there, and they have a date on them. And so you can see which one is last week's, and you can kind of listen backwards if you haven't heard the first one, because we're going to have a continuation of that discussion on the show. Yay! I'm so glad all of you are here. Thank you. So we got that far, and we had rather a detailed discussion. And then there were, we talked about different kinds of setbacks and what happens and what we should do about it, right? Because we are a practical show and not just one with theory. I mean, theory's nice and everything, but really we'd like to know what to do about things, and we'd like to know what the common threads are and what we should do about them so that they don't become impediments, right? Right, yeah. And so we talked about that, and we were talking about, and then we ran out of time. And yes, I know, people are saying I never get to the recipe part, which is sometimes true. Yeah, these recipes have been up like 3 shows worth, haven't they? We'll try today. I'm sorry about that. I guess it's because we get so interested in the conversation. And I think that the learning is so important. And, yeah, I know a lot of you really like the recipes, and I'm going to really try to do it this time. And so, like, yes, I haven't gotten to these yet, and we're going to try to do it. Since this is a continuation, I think we will have time. Yeah. Thank you, though. Thank you for liking them. Thank you for liking that part. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we were talking about the setbacks and what happens and like that, and then there were a lot of questions about the process, really. Mm-hmm. So we had lack of consensus. That happens. And then a lot of people want to know how the process setbacks are handled, the process disagreements. Mm-hmm. The actual disagreements about the process that cause a setback, mm-hmm. and it causes us to have problems in the group that need to be handled. Mm-hmm. For example, Prue says that they have a process disagreement about how long it should take. Mm-hmm. How long it should take. That's a real basic process disagreement, if we're going to have one, and it might cause a setback that we have to make temporary so that people don't leave the group because they disagree with how long it's going to take. The answer to how long should it take is usually longer than you think, is what it really is. A lot of you have gotten that question, and the answer, I'm going to say it depends again, really early in the show, too. Sometimes we know how long it's going to take because we're doing a seminar or a workshop, or a moot court, an example, a class, something like that. So it's got a finite number of meetings or a finite number of hours, right? A workshop, we're going to get done what we set out to do. Mm-hmm. Half a day? Well, it's not very much. We've got to pare down what we're going to do. But you know what I mean? Sometimes things have a process time given. It's finite. You know how long it's going to take. It's going to take a semester to learn all of this. Mm-hmm. As far as the question, which comes up usually at the first getting together, how long is this going to take, right? We've all had that question. Yeah. And the answer is that I try very hard, just like on this show, it has a certain time slot. I could go over it, but I try not to, because remember that we discussed that time is everyone's most valuable commodity. Not money, because money can be replaced, but time. Time is really important. And when I set a meeting, I set a group meeting, even if it's not in person. Because after all, people have to carve out the time to come, even if it's not in person. They have to carve out that time in their lives to show up to talk about the issues, to give, have a give and take. when I set out a time, it's going to take an hour, 2 hours, however long it takes, I stick to it. Because then people know that if they say, well, it's from 6 to 7, all right, I'll be home at 7:30 to their significant other or something. They know it's true, right? Because I have carved out the time and it is going to be respected. Yeah, I mean, that's only fair. Because most of the time, the participants are volunteers in the sense that they're not being paid by the group. Now, they might be have been sent, in a sense, and they're being paid by an employer who wishes to resolve something, for example, but they are not actually being paid per meeting, right? So they need to be their time needs to be respected. Come to think of it, their time needs to be respected, even if they are being paid for a meeting. Good point. People are saying payment is irrelevant. Good point. So how long will it take? Well, this meeting is going to take an hour. We've set that. It's from 6 to 7, and we could socialize for half an hour or something afterwards, but the meeting will really be over. You can leave. I also like to leave a little bit of social time beforehand. I always start opening and like that half an hour early at least because, A, it gives people a time to meet each other, and I think that's very important. And, B, it also means that if you get stuck in traffic or something, because I live urban, you will not be late to the actual meeting, right? We haven't started without you. So that I always have half an hour leeway at least before the meeting. And then, well, we have a social hour, have social half hour, whatever, and half an hour at least afterwards so that we can, well, we can finish the food, we can have a convivial discussion, we can learn something about each other, like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. So how long does it take? When I answer, people are asking what I say when people ask that. I usually say it depends how hard we work. Ha, it's a trick, see? The faster we go, the less setbacks we throw in each other's way, the more efficient we are, the shorter the time for the process, right? People are amazed by that fact. Yes. Pardon me. They are. They're just amazed. My goodness, I didn't think about it that way. Yeah, it encourages everybody to work harder and to not waste everyone's time with silly pettiness. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We want to get going. We want to get this done. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a time period for something. It takes as long as it takes, but it would take less long if we were more efficient. Yeah, so how long does it take? It's up to you. I always say it's up to you. The harder we work, the faster we work, the more we get along, the less time it'll take, the faster we'll get there. Yeah. Carrie and others are saying that it's not just time about the process. It's time, location, and frequency. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes there's a process disagreement about the location and frequency that goes with the time, usually. But if people are dissatisfied with the location, or some people find it very kind of nuisancey to get to, I won't say hard because you didn't pick some place where people really can't access. We could switch locations. I usually, because I am so urban, I usually try to physically meet on a week night after work in a downtown area if most of my people are downtown. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have to think about where most of your participants are. Mm-hmm. And as far as the frequency, some groups like to meet lots. Some groups like in person. Some groups like to meet mostly online. Nowadays, you really don't have to always be in person, right? How about Skype? Mm-hmm. And conference calling and like that? I tend to ask my participants and get a feel for how many people can physically come and how many people are going to be there in voice, in the conference call, in the room. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, that works very well because you get to be there. You don't have to actually sit there to be there. You know, this conference call piece of equipment is not very expensive and easy to do. Mm-hmm. I take a lot of people are recommending, is it called an app? You know, they're recommending those little websites that are free where you can schedule meetings and give people a choice, and they click off which ones they can come to, and they kind of vote. And then you get all the results, and then you say who is able to come and that most people can come, for example, on a Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, right? And you do that each time so that people don't have to always have an open spot in their calendar. Yes. Quite a few people, Caroline and others, are saying that it's important to have a set time for meeting like first Wednesday. If you've got issues, I think that's true, and then people calendar it and they know it's coming. That's a big advantage. It depends what it is that you're doing and whether or not you really need to meet on such a set schedule. Mm-hmm. If the process is going to take a long time and you need to meet on a set schedule and it's kind of big and everybody understands that there's lots to do and you prep for it the whole month long, yes, very good thing. Those of you who have been here before have heard me mention that Rotary had a big polio project, trying to cure polio and eradicate it from the face of the earth. Actually, not cure it, prevent it. And that was a big project, and we met frequently, and the meetings were set at a certain time on a certain day of the month. But I think they were first and third Wednesdays, right? And so that was a time, but it was always something to say, always something to report, always something that needed to be done. I'm not a big fan of meeting for the sake of meeting. Mm-hmm. But if there's a purpose, yes. Setting an actual time and time for all year long, or whatever, how much time it's going to take, is very practical if it's warranted. And if not, then you can take the internet survey who can come at this time. Also location. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of fond of having a single central location just because people know where it is and can get there and are comfortable with it. But then again, I have the luxury of having many, many appropriate places to meet. So it depends where you are and where you're living. You might actually be meeting in people's houses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another process disagreement that Gail and others are bringing up is disorganization that causes delay. Mm-hmm. Disorganization that causes delay. We've all been in groups like that where somebody has taken on more than they, you know the expression, more than they can chew? It means that you really bit off more than you could chew. Yeah, thank you, is the expression. It means that somebody has really taken on too much responsibility in regards to this group, these issues. They just kind of can't. It's hard to do, and it's just one of those things, and they're just not real organized. Disorganization will indeed cause a delay, and delays cause setbacks, right? If you're the person that's taken on more than they can handle, and sometimes we are, right? Learn to delegate. See if you can get somebody to volunteer. Secretary, so to speak, is kind of a thankless job where there's a lot of, well, not paperwork anymore, but a lot of emailings and things to keep everyone on track. If somebody's willing to do that, that's fantabulous. I must confess that when I, and this is basically my profession, so I can do this, but when I have a group that's going to need a lot of tracking and information that needs tracking and like that, because I am paid usually for these groups, which does make a difference, I do indeed hire somebody to do it. Really, truly, I have a staff person, and I have them do it, right? But that's because I have a staff person. But there are lots of people with lovely organizational skills who would love to help for a fairly moderate fee, right? Yeah. And then nobody has to volunteer. And then somebody, which is you, has to keep track of the employees, so to speak. But it's a kind of a time-consuming job, but not a real hard one. I actually thank you. I'm getting lots of recommendations. Thank you for all of your participation for different kinds of people who handle that kind of thing. And my absolute favorite is student, because they have very good computer skills. It doesn't matter if they're doing it at 2 in the morning. What difference is it? It's just an organizational thing, not a physical organizational thing usually, but a computery, send out the information, collect it, that kind of a thing. And you can pay them by the hour. I'm afraid that I have several students that I like very much who are quite willing to handle the extras, because they get some money and they have some time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to be, well, if it's proprietary, you cannot expect anyone not to talk, I mean, as far as that goes. So proprietary, you're going to have to find someone in the group or someone who can sign a serious proprietary agreement that can do the organization if you can't do it all yourself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's different. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, yeah, competency is always an issue, but that's why you get someone who's very good, and you treat them very nicely, and you're not cheap on them about giving them their hourly fee. Right? Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another type of setback that is a procedural one that a lot of people, Prospera and others, are talking about is the inability to delegate. Hey, that's what we just talked about, right? I don't want somebody else to do it. I can do it all myself. No, you can't. That's why the participants in your group would love to help. You might need an outside person to help with the organization, as we just talked about. Delegate. There's nothing better. And, you know, if you're going to be a good person, a good delegator, and you don't want to have to do it all yourself because you think you're perfect. I know, we're all perfect, aren't we? Excuse me, took a sip of water. If you're going to delegate, and you are, because you can't do everything yourself. I mean, there must be other perfect people in the world, right? Right. When you must know what you want and know when you've got it. I've seen lots of people delegate, and what they really want is a mini-me. They want someone to do it exactly the way they would have done it, except faster and better. Well, if the project is being done, if time is being kept, if it's being done efficiently, and you're getting to the goal, what difference is it how? I mean, not illegally, but how exactly someone is doing it, right? They're just looking at it a little bit differently, and that might be a good thing too. And the main thing is you got to know what you want to be the outcome, and you have to know when you've got it so that you're satisfied and not always being petty dispute. I've seen people be unable to delegate, and when they do, don't like it. Because they don't know what they want, and they don't know when they've got it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you need to have the ability to delegate. And if you're having trouble doing it, sit down and think why. Mm-hmm. I always like to say sit down as the other person and think why. Pretend you're them. Pretend you're the person that you're dealing with and think why. Why is this not working? Mm-hmm. And also a lot of people are talking about the process, and thank you very much for all of your participation. We've got Bettina and others are talking about outside setbacks hurting the process. Certainly they cause delay. Either a person or an organization, which is, of course, a group of people, that is interfering and interfering with the process. Sometimes just in the sense of being insidious because they're trying to make it stop secretly, but they don't want to come right out and say it because it's not politically correct or something, right? And so the outside group makes certain that their representative is never available. You ever see that? Yeah. They make them do something else whenever there's a meeting or whenever there's something to be done so that they can't really participate properly in the group, right? Yeah, that's nicely insidious. And then you get a setback because you can't go forward. And see, that has to be dealt with on the outside interference level, right? We didn't tell us when type thing, yeah. Or perhaps we can make a deal so that we could have our participant and someone else could take their job. Yeah. I've actually offered to have people come in and help when that happens. Come into the organization of the and free up my important participant, yeah. Now we've kind of decided, I think, over these two shows, that setbacks are inevitable, right? It really can't help them. These things happen. Mediation, negotiation is a give and take. And when you have a give and take, sometimes things get a little delayed. You take two steps forward and one step backward for a little while. I know they're temporary, but sometimes it feels longer. So what should we do to minimize the effect? What can we do to minimize the effect of the setback? Now, it's going to be temporary, but it's a nuisance. So what can we do to prevent it from taking hold or to prevent it from really, really interfering with the process? Oh, this is a good idea. Luke says you can acknowledge as a group that the process isn't always smooth. This will prevent paralysis. Acknowledge as a group that the process isn't always smooth. This prevents paralysis. Yeah. Because sometimes people go, oh, my God, we've hit a bump. We're not on the same page anymore. And they get all panicky and kind of, it is true, as Luke says, they get kind of paralyzed. They're having trouble going forward, having trouble overcoming the setback is what's happened, yeah. So acknowledge as a group before anything happens, that the process isn't always smooth. We're going to have some give and take. We're going to take two steps forward, and then there's going to be one step back. Nothing to worry about. We're still on the process. We're still going forward. Yeah. Zoe says to handle setbacks immediately with open discussion. I'm a very big one on not letting things fester. There's no reason for it. It will not be a good thing to just let people kind of simmer and get them angrier and make them, yeah, if you don't acknowledge the setback right away, as Zoe says, and discuss it openly, people get set in their opinions, and it'll be harder to have an open discussion. I'm very big on that. In fact, if someone does something kind of less than perfect, at, for example, the end of a session, I will be forced to extend the session maybe so we don't all leave on a bad note, so that we don't all leave kind of angry. Sometimes people do have to leave because they have scheduled it for a certain time. But everyone understands that that is unavoidable. And then we have the little private discussion with the person about bring this up earlier in the meeting, right? So that we don't all have to stay, because sometimes that's a tactic too, right? Elaine and others are saying not only handle it immediately with open discussion, but resolve it and then go forward. Yeah, I like to resolve things as fast as possible and then actually announce that we're going forward so that everybody understands it. Yeah. I like to be very clear. I'm not much on subtlety, and that's the truth. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of agreement about that, although some people, well, I'm not going to say do psychological games, but I'm not big on that. Some of you are more so. It depends if it works for you. I'm kind of upfront, and I lack subtlety in the respect that I don't like people to have innuendo and things. No one knows what it means, and then people take it wrong, has been my experience. Yeah. Rachel says to recognize the potential problem and take action to prevent it or mitigate it. That's what we've had quite a few shows for Recipe for Peace now. By the way, they're all archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And we talk about that a lot, to prevent or mitigate problems before they start. And that has to do with keeping control of the group dynamic, not letting anyone violate the civility rules, for example. And also, somewhat on experience, but we can tell when things are going a little off the path. And we need to prevent it and mitigate it. That's why we have the timeouts too, right? When things are getting a little, maybe heated or something, that's a good time for a timeout to have a nice bit of food together, maybe something nice to drink. It might not even be alcoholic. It could just be a cold beverage. And like that, so that we can take 3 deep breaths, so that we can talk to the person who is just about to make a disruption and kind of calm them down. And we can reset into a more convivial mode. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really the reason for the timeouts and the breaks with the food. It's not really, I always say this, it's not really because we're hungry necessarily. The food is a tool to get us away from the formal format of the process so that we can take 3 deep breaths and rethink our position if it was going to be counterproductive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, this is good. There's a Blue Angels motto. Now, Blue Angels is a, I don't know how many there are. Anybody know? They are a Air Force flying in fancy blue state-of-the-art airplanes performance troop. And yes, I know I'm going to get a lot of people telling me it's not just performers, that they're real flyers and they're really Navy air pilots and like that. And I know that. But when they are the Blue Angels, as a group, they go around to festivals and things all over the country. They fly in, yes. They go around all over the country, and they are an exhibition team. How's that? Yeah. An exhibition team, I suppose it promotes the Air Force, but it's kind of interesting. They are formation flyers. There's a whole bunch of them, and they go up and down in formation very fast, and they do, people are calling it stunts, kind of. But in any event, you got the picture. So the Blue Angels are a fancy group. It's a big honor to be a Blue Angel, and it's very, very fun and very cool. And I'm getting this from quite a few people, and thank you for all of your participation. There is a Blue Angels motto that fits what we're discussing. Want to hear it? It's fess up, fix it, move on. I like it. The Blue Angels motto, fess up, that means confess that you kind of made a boo-boo. fix it, and move on. Yeah, just don't let the, it's kind of like, well, don't let the setback sink in. Fess up. We're having something that's a problem. Let's talk about it. Fix it. Let's find a solution. And move on. We're not going to hold a grudge and keep bringing it up every meeting. It's inappropriate. We've fessed up and we fixed it. We're going to move on because it's too much of our time, too much of the most valuable thing that we can give. Mm-hmm. So now here's a good question that quite a few people are asking because we all know this is a practical show and not just theory. So the question is, how can we fix a setback so that we can move on? Good point, because sometimes it's caused by participants, well, they're not agreeing very well, or they're not getting along very well. So how can we fix it so that we can move on, so that we can follow the Blue Angels motto, fess up, fix it, and move on? So how can we fix it? Because, you know, in the Air Force and the Blue Angels team, this is really true. If someone's not fitting in, they're out. And because they've got a commander who's in charge, right? And so he or she makes the decision about who can be in the, on the team. And it's a big honor, I understand, to be a Blue Angel, and it's very cool, and you get to go all over the country, and people really respect you, and you get to have a party, and everybody shakes your hand and takes their picture. It's a biggie. They're celebrities. And so everybody wants to stay, right? So you fess up, fix it, and move on, or you are out. But in real life, how can we fix a setback so that we can move on? Because the commander, which is us, oftentimes doesn't have the luxury of, yeah. So how can we do that? Dika says that you can bring in expert opinion to solve the impasse. Expert opinion. That is a very good idea. I do indeed do that with some frequency when we've hit a real setback, because you kind of need a third party to tell everyone how to move forward. And that third party is an expert, right? You bring them in because they are the tiebreaker. They are the person that everybody can listen to without losing faith, right? Yeah, without losing respect, without having to admit, for example, to their group of which they who they represent, that they had to, the evil word, compromise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you bring in an expert to tell people what it is that they need to do, even if you know what it is that they need to do and you've been telling them all along. You're too close. Yeah. So bring in an expert. Right. An expert does not. We actually have an entire show about experts archived on the website recipeforpeacenow.com. Quite a few people are asking how. If there's no budget for an expert, what do you do? Lots of times experts do not need to be paid. Sometimes they do. Depends on the issues. Sometimes, I don't know how to say this better because it seems really kind of rotten when you go out and say it. And I suppose if you don't do it very often, it's not taking advantage of people. There are some experts like professors and things and authors and professors and who like to be asked. And they would like to come and make a presentation to your group or at least Skype into your group or whatever and give their opinion. They really like to be asked and they don't expect to be paid in money. You just have to respect them and ask their opinion, and they really enjoy doing it. And I've got friends like that, and sometimes a group really doesn't have a monetary budget. But for heaven's sakes, we could all chip in and go to dinner, for example, right? Or, you know, something like that, so that we could have a lovely evening together, or breakfast or whatever, and the expert could give his or her opinion and help us. There are lots of wonderful people in the world who will do that. Sometimes the expert does need to be paid, and we might have to chip in for it. It depends. If you need an expert that is so expensive that it is not something the group can really realistically chip in for, you may be looking, well, you may need to find someone like on the internet, look at experts that are not actually going to come to you, do some research. Because if you need someone that expensive, you've probably got a budget. If you need a real scientist or a doctor or a lawyer or something to really give an on-the-record opinion, yeah? And if not, that's where research comes in. You know, the expert to help does not necessarily person who comes to your group and eats the potluck, right? It can be, yes, thank you. A lot of people are saying, Benjamin and others are saying that if you want to get an expert to show you something or do something, look on YouTube. Man, YouTube is wonderful. You're also right. You can learn anything from YouTube. Now, there's usually about 5 dozen YouTube videos on any given subject. And so you got to kind of weed them out beforehand so that we don't look at a bunch of stuff that's really just kids acting up in some way. You know, sometimes some of that's garbage. But a lot of times you can really get an expert to show you something, to tell you something, to instruct you right on YouTube. People are wonderful about making YouTube videos. And they're so interesting. And they're so, you know, you can really learn something. And so, yeah, so if you could research for the expert, it doesn't necessarily have to be someone who is presenting to you. Or if you need it, you could get someone to give an opinion about some sort of specific issue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Eli and others are saying you look to others in similar situations. Yeah. Look at what other groups did, other groups that are similar to you that handled the same type of a situation. Look to others in similar situations. Mm-hmm. And that's research. And after my own heart, Barbara and others are saying that you also can see where they didn't succeed, kind of as a cautionary to this group. Not only as a cautionary, I really think oftentimes that failure is just as interesting as success because it really tells you something. Uh-huh. And it tells you what not to do. You go, wow, they did not succeed, and it looked like they were gonna. What did they do that got them off the path that didn't work? And then you can gauge yourself from there. Yeah, I think that's very important to really look not only at what worked, but what didn't work and why, so we don't accidentally duplicate it. Megan and others are advocating creating teams to fix the setback, to prevent it. Mm-hmm. You create teams and propose a solution and then incorporate the most workable. Create teams to propose a solution and then incorporate the most workable. Yes? Depends how big the group is. Yeah? Because teams implies quite a few people. And how long the process is going to take. Remember at the outset here we talked about how long will this take. The more, well, let's think about this. People are saying that teams take a long time and then they have to first report back and like that. It kind of depends. Yeah, we're getting a lot of response to that. It kind of depends on what you think of as a team and whether it's just a group or even two people that are going to do an in-depth research and bring back the results, for example, next week. See, it doesn't have to take a long time, and there don't have to be a lot of people on a team voting. It could be someone who has a couple of people who have some expertise or even more time to devote to researching something, for example. Or maybe, yes, sometimes you want to go look at something. A piece of something on a property, something to do with ecology, something to do with a renovation, something to do with a clinic. We've done all kinds of things like that, and all of us can't go, right? But we would like to have not just the report of the person making money on the project, the administrator of the clinic, for example, or whatever it is, the school, the clinic. We do this with Rotary a lot, in addition to my own practice. And sometimes you kind of need to go look to see how it's going, right? And whether or not we're going to continue to help them, continue to fund them, whatever it is. But we can't all go. So you send somebody, your group, a trusted, because they're your group, so that you can trust what they see. And you send a team, two people, maybe even one person, and they go and look and take pictures and report back. See, that would be a real good use of a team to prevent us from having a setback because we don't know what we're doing and what's needed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Etta says to form alliances with similar groups because there's power in numbers. Oh, I so agree. A lot of times, whatever issue that we're trying to resolve affects other people, other groups, besides the one that we're in, right? And we need to make an alliance with them, especially because they've got good ideas too, right? And they're doing interesting things, and they're thinking thoughts that we haven't thunk. And, excuse me, and they are, the more people power behind something, especially if we need to attract the attention of the authorities to change something, the more power there will be in numbers. Yeah. So we form alliances with similar groups so that we have some power behind us and we get together. And, you know, there's a little bit of friction often because the groups are run by humans and humans have power needs. But still, we all want the same ultimate goal, even if it's for different reasons. Yeah. You know, yeah, people are giving me a lot of examples. It's the most vivid one that's in my area, actually, that I could think of as an example. And whether or not you approve or not is irrelevant. But you know, in the United States, and this is, of course, a global show, and this is not true in a lot of places in the world, but we're kind of puritanical. So in the United States, marijuana is illegal. It's a federal law, right? And you're not allowed to sell it, not allowed to buy it. People go to jail. It's a very, well, it depends how, I think it's a very dumb thing because it fills the jails with people who are not really criminals, and there was a great groundswell in this country, in the United States, where I happen to be, I know this is a global show, that marijuana is good for medical purposes, for glaucoma, for AIDS, for other things that are, for migraines, for all kinds of things, because it's an herbal remedy, really. And so there was a lot of groups with different reasons and different types of people entirely, got together and really made on the state level, get medical marijuana approved so that you could buy it legally if you had a medical reason to do so. I can't even describe to you how big this is. Because it means that the states have put it to the vote of the people, which is how this happens. There is a a vote during an election, during when we have an election, there's other stuff on the ballot, and that was one of the things that's on the ballot. And quite a few states have approved licensed medical marijuana shops where you can go legally under state law and buy marijuana to assist with your medical needs. State law, for those who are unfamiliar with the United States law, federal law is the big government, Washington, D.C., the president, like that, Congress. That should be override. You can, the states can't make a law that something is legal that the federal government says is illegal, because there is such, there was such a voter outpouring, the people, and quite frankly, the people vote the politicians in this country. And, you know, hey, they, I imagine they didn't really care, but they want to keep their nice job. And so the states are in a kind of, well, they're not even in a, they call it a gray area, but it's really not. They've made laws legalizing something that is federally illegal, and because there are so many people, the power of numbers, and because, as Ia says, that they formed alliances with similar groups, all kinds of different groups, all kinds of different ailments, all kinds of different ideas, they formed, within the state, people formed, the groups have formed alliances across the country and across the state. The states are actually violating federal law, and the federal government is not enforcing. Wow, what power in numbers. Yeah, and yes, and it's a good point. Quite a few of you who are familiar with the United States and like that, we're actually having a new push with a lot of people and a lot of enthusiasm among the voters. Two states, you know, there are lots of states in the United States, two states, Colorado and Washington, have actually now voted to allow recreational marijuana stores where you don't need to have a medical reason that's actually certified by a doctor and like that. You need a medical card. You just have to be more than 21 years old, which is always the rule for anything that is somewhat intoxicating. That is the rule for liquor. And so it's kind of like, yes, that's a, that is a change that is being promoted. Some states have not done medical marijuana, but they're all kind of looking at it because the people, there's power in numbers. And the states that don't have it, the people who need it, they're getting together in groups to put it on the voter, to the voters. Pretty certain the voters will say yes, for at least medical. You see? So it's all, that's the power of numbers. Mm-hmm. And of team, of cross-alliance. The various groups that want it, need it, advocate for it, getting together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that also pools resources, yes. Because there's some, pardon me, some advertising and stuff. But nowadays with social media, I don't know how really, well, when you get down to getting to the voters, I suppose they do pool their resources and hire some experts to present it properly so that voters understand what it is. There's television ads and stuff. So, yeah, so it's not all social media. But at the beginning, it's really kind of social media, too. Mm-hmm. Kadar says you, in order to find a reasonable and a workable solution, you need to invite other participants to create a workable solution, especially if the setback is from the outside. Yeah. Get other participants to, everybody should think on it and find a workable solution so that it's just temporary, and temporary isn't very long on our setback. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I can see that we're like 5 minutes away from the end of our time together. So I'm going to get at least one of these recipes in so that you guys don't think that I don't do it ever anymore. Because I do. I get people telling me, how come you haven't done a recipe in 4 weeks? I'm like, oh, we didn't quite get to it because we had such a good conversation. But yes, the recipes are important. People say I don't think they're important. And I do. It's just that really learning is important too. So we're going to do our safe recipe, which is the spinach and ricotta pasta. Delicious. It is a safe recipe. Why? Because it has not too many ingredients, and my participants would be familiar with them. And before you have a potluck, yes, I'm going to say this, even though we're getting short on time because it's so important. Before you invite people for food, you have to take a survey among your participants that you tell everyone about, if anyone has a food allergy, a prohibition, or a religious prohibition. You don't want to have somebody come and have a bad time. This is supposed to be a convivial atmosphere. Also, when people bring something, you will ask them, please, to list what is in the dish. Not just the name of it, meatballs, but what's in it so that I can judge whether or not I can eat it. Yeah. So this is the spinach and ricotta pasta. We're going to have a nice pound of pasta, which we're going to cook al dente and drain it. Let's reserve half a cup of water because it's hot water and it's got starch in it, and we're going to use it in the rest of the recipe. I personally think that you should have some sort of pasta that is not long and stringy and messy because it's hard to handle, hard to serve, and it's bad for the carpet. So I think you should do like a rigatoni, bow tie, or something that is pieces that you can control with a spoon and don't need one of those tong thingies with the teeth that leak. So it's just a messy concept. Have a tablespoon of olive oil. Let's have 8 cups of spinach. You want to use real spinach, that's fantabulous. I'm going to use frozen, it's easier. But if you're going to use frozen like me, you need to thaw it and pat it dry. Make it like fresh spinach, right? You're going to use real spinach. You need to stem it and cut it into about half-inch strips. Believe me, use frozen if you have. It's just easier. Thaw it, pat it dry. You're good to go because they've already done all the trimming. Cup and a half of ricotta cheese. Cup of half and half. Do not switch out the half and half for milk because it won't be good. We're going to have our half cup of reserved pasta water. And we're going to have a whole cup of grated Parmesan cheese because it's so yummy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to heat the olive oil. We're going to add the spinach, a little bit of salt and pepper maybe, and cook the spinach until it's cooked through. If it's real spinach, you always say cook it till it wilts. If it's the frozen kind, cook it till it's nice and hot. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to stir in the ricotta cheese and the half and half and the pasta water. We're going to stir it all around. We're going to simmer it for about 5 minutes over a low heat so that it's all hot and incorporated. We're going to add our delightful cooked drained pasta and the Parmesan cheese. And we're going to cook it until it's all blended around. We're going to stir it. It's going to be delicious. And look, it was a fast recipe. We made it within our time. Easy to do. You can do it right when everybody is there. It simmers if you have the facilities, it simmers beautifully in the room. Very delicious. Kind of light for a pasta dish. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And really, it's easy to do because you just cook the spinach, throw everything else in, and simmer, throw the ricotta and the half and half and the water in, stir it around, cook, 5 minutes, nice and simmered, nice and hot, nice and bubbly. It really makes the sauce, right, is what you've done. You add the cooked pasta Parmesan cheese, and when by the time the Parmesan is all nicely incorporated, there you've got it. You've got your whole dish. It's delicious. It's all incorporated, and it's delightful. Of course, you double the recipe if you've got more people. Uh-huh, yeah. So there we have it. We've actually made it to have a potluck recipe at the end. Fantabulous. And we are almost out of time. Thank you so much for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. If you want to contact us, we're recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website is recipeforpeacenow.com. The prior shows are archived on the website, so you can listen to anything you'd like. Thank you so much for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.